Walter Price Reel 8. So you made friends as you went along, but you did, people didn't stay with you for very long because you were all moving about, or?
Well, in the various offices, we tended to stay together quite some time, perhaps some months. But if you are asking me how many people I can remember in the army, what I was going to say before, when you first asked me this question, was the reason I thought that you were here today was that you had been told by Captain Cosgrove Travers, or Travers Crossgrove, that I might know something about 244 Field Company, or the 53rd Division, because he was in the 53rd Division, but he, unlike me, was in the battles of France and Germany. Well, the reason he would know me is that one day I take Sargent magazine, and I always looked in the reunion section, and one day I found that 244 Field Company RE were meeting in Swansea, right, and would welcome any old members to a reunion. Right. So I was very interested, because I thought that I would meet some of the people that I was called up with. So when we were down, we used to go to Pembrokeshire quite often. I called in on the secretary, he lived outside Swansea, and I joined up as a member. And I asked him, I said, could you please let me know, or let me have a list of the members of 244 Field Company RE who were called up in 1939. And I got a list from him, and all I can think is that simply because I was in headquarters, I didn't know anyone.
No.
And even when we were trainers as TA people before the war, I did mix with lots of other soldiers that were training, but there were no names that rang a bell.
No one.
Which disappointed me, because I wanted to meet
your contemporaries.
Yeah.
Right. So, VJ Day, do you remember that?
Yes, I was in Swansea.
Oh, you were back home.
Because it's something else I've forgotten, that when I was in Italy, they started LIAP. I forgot what that meant, but it meant that you, LIAP, that you had a pass to go home for, I don't know, I think a fortnight. And I can remember.
So you went all the way from Italy to Swansea, did you?
I went, yeah. It was interesting, from
how did you do it?
Starts with an M, a city in north northern
Milan.
Italy. Milan. I went from Milan. And whilst I was in Milan, which may be interesting, we had a day or two there before we got on the train to take us home.
There was a whole troop of you going, were there?
Pardon?
There were several of you travelling together, were there?
Well, I was the only one from my unit, from 20 CRE Works.
Right.
But, and then you met up, and they were obviously making up numbers to go on a train. to go home in Milan though. Whilst I was there, I went to an opera, and it was a beautiful summer's evening, and it was in, I think, a part of a castello, a castle. It was out of this world. It was the stone sort of fortified wall all the way around, and they must have built this hillock, and you had these seatings around, rather like an amphitheatre, and you were in the open air with the stars and the moon, and they did the two little operas, one Cavalier Rusticana, and it was fascinating. And they were in Cavalier Rusticana, going up the hill that they'd built, there was dozens of people. Anyway, yes, then we went to Domel Dossola from Milan by rail, and then through the tunnel. I can't remember the name of that one now. It's a famous tunnel into Switzerland. Then we had to change trains because the tracks in Italy are different to the ones in France. So we changed trains at Geneva, I think, in Switzerland, and went on to the port and home. Mm-hmm. Then I had to go back to Ancona after a fortnight. Mm-hmm. But that was nice after so many years.
Yes, yeah. What was your parents' attitude when you came home on leave then?
Oh, delighted, yeah. Because they had some medals then.
What did you have medals for?
Well, we had a medal for, at that time, for North Africa and for Italy. Mm-hmm. But I ended up with 6 because you were also given medals later for territorial long service and general service.
Did they treat you differently?
Pardon?
Did they treat you differently this time when you came home on leave? Because you must have been much more grown up and worldly wise by then.
Yes. Because I'd taken up smoking when I was in Ireland, but I didn't drink a lot, except, as I said, on VJ night we had weak Italian beer or something like that. But didn't take up serious drinking until a lot later. They must have seen a hell of a difference between a boy. Mind you, I'd gone home from Ireland on leaves, but so there must have been about 3 or 4 years they didn't see me. Mm. And they must have seen a hell of a difference. But you'd never think of these things at the time. And it certainly didn't. Wasn't made obvious to me. Mm.
So when you came to demobilisation, how did you feel about the process? I mean, they more or less sort of stamp your card and send you on
your
way.
It was a bit rough and ready, actually. But I've always been someone who thinks on the both sides. And when you're dealing with hundreds or thousands of people who were being demobbed, you know, and it would be hundreds a day in Aldershot or wherever, then there's no way they can cope other than a sort of rough and ready way.
When you left your unit, I mean, did you say goodbye to anyone when you went off to be demobilised?
Well, I didn't say goodbye to the colonel because he didn't give me a very good report. He was an elderly man joining us, and he didn't think much of my work. He said that, on my leaving report, he said that with a lot more training, Price will make a first-class draftsman. But he doesn't, you know, is not, his initiative is not particularly good, or something like that expression, which I could have. I remember going into a captain who I got on quite well, and I said, he's giving me a terrible. And he was a regular soldier, so they were both regular soldiers. And I was a bit browned off because, like everyone who'd been in the services that length of time, browned off, we used to say, wanted to get home. And this old chap who took charge of us in Salonika, he obviously spent all his time in the army, but he was due for retirement, obviously. And I never forgave him for that. But I can remember, saying goodbye to... we were two. I was staff sergeant, and there was a WO2 with me, and we were very chummy. And the draftsmen, I can remember saying goodbye to them, obviously, and some of the girls in the office, because we had civilian employees there, Greek women, girls. I did not like his report.
Could you leave the paper? Right. So, on demobilisation, I mean, were you were given a payment, were you, of some sort for your service? Did you get a...
payment?
Yes, if you had some sort of cash amount, or...
No, I was reasonably paid as a sergeant, which is equivalent actually to a sub-lieutenant and a staff sergeant. And I paid an allocation to my mother fairly early on when we first joined up, we were earning a shilling a day. But it did gradually grew as I got promoted, and I made an allocation to her, an allotment it was called, of 10 shillings a week. And she very kindly put it in the post office savings bank for me, so that when I came home, I had a nice amount in the post office, which she hadn't used at all. She just put it aside for me. But no, the army, once you'd finished with the army, that was it.
Yeah.
But I must say that I heard about grants, government grants, and whilst I was still an article pupil and went back to my old firm, during that time, few months that I was with them, I applied for a grant. No, I applied for admission to Oxford School of Architecture and got in. And I did get a grant, a government grant then, which was £3. It was £151 a year, which was £3 something a week, which you had to live on. Which was, we could get a meal for 1 and 6, so it was okay.
That's it. So you got that as a sort of...
Well, it existed,
yes. Yeah, right. So what was your reaction, you know, as you left the army? You were relieved or happy or sad or...
Well, I have always said that I enjoyed it. It was something. It was a wonderful experience and a wonderful trip. But I was exceedingly lucky. I mean, I lost some of my friends from home in different arms. And I also lost people sort of in action, but whilst I was abroad, but I enjoyed it. I was a bit just put out towards the end by the chap, the colonel, gave that report to me, so I ripped it up.
So you went on to do your architecture training and then you went straight into work, did you?
Yeah, I... they accepted me into the Oxford School of Architecture. I started in September 1946 and I applied for a government grant and I got one of £3.16 a week, something like that, £3.16 a week. And I passed out quite well, won the top prize after 5 years. I got a job at Swansea Guildhall. I went back to my old firm to begin with, and they paid me a pittance, so I saw an advert for architects in the Architect Journal in Swansea, and I applied for one and got it for the vast improved sum of £565 a year or something, with increments if you stayed, and I enjoyed that. And Dudley Lewis was in the Quantity Surveyors department. He was Martin Lewis's father, as I said, and he'd come back and he'd gone back to the Guildhall because he'd started there as an architect pupil before the war, and I stayed there until I got a letter from the Oxford School of Architecture asking me would I consider coming up and becoming a studio master. I didn't call them form masters, they were studios. You had five studios for each for 1 year. I would take over second year studio. So I came up, was interviewed in the town hall as it was then, and was accepted. And even then, the chap, you've heard of Brookes University, or Oxford Brookes University. The chap who interviewed me was Brookes, Henry Brookes, and he was a delightful chap. He, in the guild, in the town hall, and he was a silversmith by profession. He was quite well known. And he told me as we walked down the high street after with the head of the school, Cave, who was still alive and still a friend of mine, that I had a terrible interview and that I didn't do well at all. But they thought I was the man for the job, so I went there and I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So what do you think have been the mental and physical effects of the war on you?
Well, that's another thing, a sore point, in a minor way. Lots of my friends, well, a number of my friends, three at least, who I became a member of a club in Oxford, a professional and businessman, known as the Clarendon Club, and they were members, and we were chatting one day and one chap was deaf and he said that he'd got a pension from the army, which was tax free, and I was then told that after some time that these other two people had pensions. So I, you know, picked up my own and I thought, well. And they told me what to do, that I had to apply for an interview. But unfortunately, I applied a year after there was a big influx of applications for pensions. And I had tinnitus, and I reckon it was through bombing in Victoria Barracks. And I've always had tinnitus. Belfast. But they tested me. I went and had an old audio test down in Oxford in a mobile caravan that they have. And I had a letter back saying that I tested and they couldn't recommend me for... they classed me as in such a class that they didn't think that my hearing was affected by the tinnitus. So I accepted that. And, but I did apply. You had to apply after that. And I could have either gone up to for an interview in London or just told them in my form that I wasn't coming. And I got a letter back saying that my claim had been dismissed. That I thought was a bit much, because what I didn't make plain at the interview, I think, is that the tinnitus, although it's all there all the time, it's not as bad as some people who even stick their head under gas, haven't they? I was horrified when I was first told that I had it, the day after I read the Telegraph or some paper, and some woman had stuck her head in the, because it was so... But mine was minor, so my answer to the question is that I thoroughly enjoyed my treatment in the army. A little dismayed that they didn't recognise that I had tinnitus because of bomb explosions, and we know that gunners and people in those arms usually end up deaf because of, in those days they didn't have so I've had a very happy existence, really.
Mm. So, any other personalities or people that come to your mind, you know, that you haven't mentioned?
Well, I was Mr. Maxwell's architect. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I dealt with the Honourable Brian Roots. Roots, you may not remember, but Roots used to produce cars.
Oh,
did you? Were you about that? Humbers and Humber Snipes and all sorts of other things like, I had a few, well, I bought a few because I left the School of Architecture. Because I got married in 1952, and my wife was an Oxford girl. I came back to the Oxford School of Architecture, and in 1954 or 56, then met Mary's, one of her cousins, there was a chap called Hartwell, who was involved with a lot of garages, and he, knowing that I was an architect, I had done the odd job, because we were allowed to practice while we were at the School of Architecture, but I ended up with doing a job for George Hartwell in Guildford, which was a big garage for Greys, and I came to the conclusion I couldn't serve two masters at once, that I couldn't do my job properly in the School of Architecture and look after, which in those days, I mean, it sounds silly now because my old firm's now doing jobs for 50 million and that sort of thing, but in those days it was a job of about 140,000, something like that, which was huge in the late mid-1950s. So I left the School of Architecture and set up business on my own, and then took a partner in later on.
And you worked for Robert Maxwell?
Well, we progressed. I started on my own in Oxford and did a lot of small college jobs, and then I brought a partner in, and then eventually four of us in practice in Oxford, different firms who had been through the School of Architecture pretty well together, we got together and formed the Oxford Architects. And because we could see that in order to do the bigger jobs, you had to be big. You had to have all the equipment and all the personnel. And by putting the four offices together and by agreeing to be equal partners, we got together. And, the firm still exists. But I've been retired now for 15 years. Now, during my time with Oxford Architects, had a variety of designing jobs, and we all had our different. I mean, we redesigned Culrose down in Cornwall after the war. It was completely redesigned. We'd done a lot of work for the American services, the aerodromes. We even designed a emergency hospital near Bicester for the Americans, which was never used. They were expecting casualties from the Gulf and wherever.
And you met Robert Maxwell during
that? Oh, well, one of my partners, he got the connection with Robert Maxwell, and he said to another partner, "I can't get on with this man. Do you want to handle it?" So his other partner took it on, and he said, because he used to call me Wally, "I can't stand him. Do you want to do it?" So I thought, well, yeah, why not? So I got on very well with him. I mean, I was Wally, and he, as far as I'm concerned, all you hear and see reported, as far as I'm concerned, is fair enough. That's other people's experience. My experience was completely different. I think what might have done it is the fact that after Philip had asked me to get in touch, I redesigned a job that he had done. I sent out for tenders, got them in, and I couldn't get hold of Maxwell. So I rang one of his directors up and I said, "Look, Mr. Street, what do I do?" He said, "The only thing you can do, Mr. Price, is go and knock him up on a Sunday morning." So this is a professional. I'd never done anything like that in my life. So I spoke to my wife and she said, "Well, if he said so, you go and do it." So I did it one Sunday morning. The doors opened. Headington Hill Hall, the cheapest council house in Oxford, and opened by this little girl whom he named his yacht after later on. And she said, "What do you want?" I said, "You want to see your dad?" And she said, "What's it about?" I told her. She said, "Hold on." So, and we spent a lot of money. There we are. But that was my experience.
Yeah,
he was pretty, as you read in the paper, I know he was tough.
Yeah.
But he had a lord, was his gardener, an Irish lord.
Lovely. Right, we must stop there. Walter Price, thank you very much indeed for all your time and all your wartime memories. And that's the end of Reel 8.